Well, welcome everybody. Episode 12 of Soul Searching, the Soul Recruitment Podcast. I hope everybody is doing well on a Thursday. And to keep you company, we've got a fantastic guest today. Katie Jones is here in the Soul Recruitment Studios.
Hi.
And we're going to be chatting all about high-performing teams. Now, Katie is a culture consultant who is passionate about helping businesses improve their culture so employees are happier at work, highly engaged and motivated to achieve results. Katie has worked in HR and learning and development for over 10 years in Sydney and London and is a highly skilled coach, facilitator and educator. So how are you, Katie?
Good. Thanks, Dan, for having me on.
My absolute pleasure. I'm really looking forward to this. As I mentioned, it's one of my favorite topics, and we're going to be chatting all about high-performing teams, how and why to build them, and much, much more. So, but before we get into some questions, I thought we'd throw it over to you to kind of give us a little bit of a background and a bio into who you are and what you do.
Cool, thanks. So I'm the CEO and founder of CultureFit HR. So I specialize in building high-performing teams. So I help companies stop losing great people and reduce their recruitment costs. I'm so passionate about it. I've been in the industry for over 10 years. I've transformed cultures around the world by maximizing the income and improving behaviors. It's been awesome. I've seen massive turnaround in team members. They're engaging more authentically. They're happier. They're achieving their objectives. And then the companies are more productive as well. Yeah. But it's much more easier when they have systems in place and an expert to help them along the way.
Absolutely. And I can imagine that obviously you've worked all over the world. Were there any little nuances, you know, differences between working with teams in different countries, or the fundamentals are all the same?
That's a good question. Everyone asks me that. To be honest, people are people, and you're going to have, you know, and everyone's got different behaviors. So it's always a challenge, I think, in every different workplace where you're at. Yep.
Okay, awesome. Well, let's kind of get into it. I'm dying to get into some content. High-performing teams, you know, what a great definition already. You know, it's already grabbed me. What do high-performing teams look like? How would I know one if I saw one?
Cool. So a high-performing team usually is a group of people that share a common goal. They are share the same beliefs, values. You know, they're really comfortable with just challenging each other and taking risk. So that's kind of what a high-performing team would look like. And I guess you would know if you saw one, because they're very clear on their vision and where they're heading together as a team.
Right. Okay. Awesome. I mean, and why is it so important these days? Why do organizations need such high-performing teams, apart from the obvious?
Yeah. So high-performing teams are generally really highly engaged people. They're really effective, so they create this really effective culture within the organization. They communicate really well with each other, and they're achieving really superior results. So, you know, when you're working for an organization and you see that, that's great for, you know, building that culture and engaging the type of people that you want to come work for you. You know, as you know, around recruiting people and how much it costs to recruit, you know, an average person is around, I think, about $5,000 per placement. So, you know, you're losing people like a lot all the time, that's going to be quite hefty for you as a business to deal with. So retaining good talent is probably one of the highest benefits of having a high-performing team.
Absolutely. And that's a great point. I mean, it's not only the recruitment cost, which could be anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000, it's also the onboarding costs, the training and development, the energy that you have to put in, the extra hours managers and team members to onboard that person. This is a massive, massive commitment. And obviously, you know, we want to try and build high-performing teams that are that also allow you to retain your staff, because it's expensive and it's disruptive.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
So take us on a little journey. I mean, when you help build high-performing teams, how do you do it? What kind of tools do you use? I mean, I'd love to get into some of the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, this is really fun. So depending on where a company is at, you know, I look at, so if the team's been working together for a while, then you'd probably look at how you lead that high-performing team. If a team has been fairly new and they're in their forming stages, I would look at probably doing a team charter. So what that involves is just getting the team together for a day and really getting down the key foundations around where this team's going. So really being clear on the vision. And then we look at what this team's working towards, so their goals. We come up with some values and behaviours and ways of working. And then the most important is their purpose. So why is this team being established? And really connecting that to the individuals as well. So finding out what's their why? Why do they get out of bed every day? And what are they working towards? And then after that, we'd work on a team model. So there's plenty out there, but I use a particular one, which is really simple. And I really love working with teams on this model. And that's called Patrick Pincione's 5 Behaviors of a Cohesive Team.
Okay, great. And how did you come about that particular model?
Yeah, so I was introduced to it when I was working with a company in London. And, you know, we implemented it into our business and it changed the way we did how we worked together. It was much, much more effective communications and teams were working cross-functionally. There was much more trust within the teams as well. Which made it easier to work with and they were more productive. So the model goes through 5 different behaviors. So the first one is trust. Yep. And you can spend, you know, forever working on trust. It's something that you just have to keep on working at. So we would spend a lot of time working through this module with the teams. We use different models, different tools like DISC. That's a great tool to understand each other's behaviours, why we communicate the way we do, and just creating that empathy within the team so that people feel that they can open up about weaknesses, be more vulnerable with each other. So once you started working through that, it makes it easier to go to the next step, which is positive conflict. So what that is around employees being able to be comfortable to challenge each other when they're in a meeting and they're discussing business situations, right, business decisions. Everyone feels comfortable to have their input. And I know everyone's probably worked in a business where you've been in a meeting, someone's talking about something and you disagree, even though you disagree, but you just want to get out of there. And once you get out of there, you just turn to your colleague and go, oh, that was just a load of bollocks, mm-hmm, and you walk away. And what that what happens there means that that person is then not committed to working on that, you know, on that business decision going forward. So you really want to try and create that environment in that meeting where people feel comfortable to open up and they're not having a fear of judgment around putting their opinion in if they don't agree with something.
Gotcha. And I suppose this kind of boils down to building that trust and that relationship across the board and way, way before that meeting. This is about, as a culture, building a trusting environment where people can come to meetings and, you know, really speak frankly about their opinions. And that's probably going to allow a much, much better and efficient process and a much more valuable process for everybody.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important to build that trust in the beginning so that when they are, you know, being open about, you know, what their opinions around something or they're challenging something, they don't have that fear that they're going to be personally attacked. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, building that trust, those relationships first. And then after that, once you do have everyone's mind, it moves on to, so like everyone has a chance to buy, and then move toward that and working on that business decision or that objective. After that, once you have everyone that is committed, you want people to be accountable. So accountability, when we talk about accountability, it's more around peer-to-peer accountability, not manager-to-employee accountability. And again, that comes down to trust. You know, if I have a great relationship with Sally, I can turn around to her and say, you know, why didn't you, you said you're gonna do X, Y, and Z, that impacts my role. And now that you haven't done it, you know, I can't achieve what I need to achieve. So being able to be open and have those conversations is really a key important thing to do within a high performing team.
Right.
Once you've gone through all those four steps, then, you know, you are going to be on your way to be more high performing and achieving more superior results. So that's a great model that I use to work through, break down the behaviors around trust, and really just work through those five key elements of building a high performing team.
And how do you go about that? Does that happen as a group as well as individual per individual, or and is it a long process or is it a short process? How does that all, what does that all look like?
Yeah, so it is a program. So I would, before we start this journey, it's really important that people are on board for change. Change is a, you know, a big thing, especially if a team's been working together for, you know, 2 years and there's underlying issues that might come up. So I really sit down with the teams beforehand. I speak to every individual, go through what the journey looks like, you know, what it might feel like, the conversations that might come up. And you can really get a feel for if that person is going to be on board for this, or if that person is, you know, this isn't the right thing for them. They're not comfortable with having these conversations. You don't know what's going on in their past. You know, stuff comes up from childhood sometimes in these meetings. So, yeah, they've got to be really ready for that change. So I ensure that I spend half a day speaking to the team members, going through that. And then the next part of the journey is a series of workshops. So that can... you can go for a week, you can go for 3 weeks. It really depends on how the company wants to spread out the journey and the program. I prefer working with companies that want to go on the program that, you know, spend over maybe 3 months so they can implement some of the behaviors, check back in, implement something else, and then check back in with me so that, they're really embedding and changing as a team.
Okay, great. And I suppose this brings a great question. What happens if you, if management has buy-in, most of the team has buy-in, but there's one individual that just does not want to do anything, does not want to change, is resistant. You can see in their eyes that they're just not interested and they're not going to, you know, give you the attention and the dedication that you need. What do you do then?
Yeah, so I think it's quite obvious when team members don't want to jump on board with this journey, and they'll soon figure that out quite quickly. You know, you will probably see some team members being a bit frustrated that that person's not coming on the journey with them. And generally, if the employee doesn't figure it out themselves, then the conversation will have to be had with the manager and say, look, maybe this isn't, you know, this is the direction we're going, maybe this isn't right for you, and look for other opportunities.
Wow, okay, great. So it's just a work in progress, and, you know, it's about using every resource you have to make sure that you get everybody on board, because the only way that this is really going to work is if everybody is on board.
Yeah,
awesome.
Definitely.
And then as you go through that journey, you know, over 3 to 6 months, and things are, you know, people have put everything in place and things are running smoothly and efficiency is high and everybody's happy and staff retention is high. How often do you revisit that client? How often do you go and just kind of do a health check in a way?
Yeah, so as you know, culture doesn't happen overnight. So it is a journey, and it takes, you know, a minimum of at least 6 to 12 months to see any shift in culture. So there's other things that I work with teams on. So each quarter I check in with a team to see how they're progressing around their culture journey. One thing I do is I work with leaders around how to lead high-performing teams through conversation.
Right.
So I coach managers through, you know, I've got 12-month modules on how to give feedback, how to help set goals, how to drive accountability. I'm working on a new tool at the moment around emotional intelligence. So checking at, you know, how emotionally intelligent you are, and you know, working through that with the manager, have more emotional intelligence and lead more authentically. And then we also look at sustaining high performing teams. So when I look at sustaining high performing teams, we look at the performance management process. So how often are our managers checking in with their employees? One thing that I find that some managers don't do, and it's so simple, is just have a coffee chat, a one-on-one regularly. It could be weekly, it could be fortnightly, but just check in on how that employee is tracking against their objectives and if they need any support.
Gotcha.
Having a good performance management process in place is also really key as well, to be able to set goals, track performance, and offer any support in terms of development there. Just coaching one-on-one with team members as well to, you know, see what they're having troubles working on, what are their goals, and then spending the time with them to help them get there.
Oh, fantastic. Now, you brought up a really, really good point and something that I hear a lot these days, emotional intelligence. Everybody's talking about emotional intelligence, especially in the workplace. And it's become a really valuable skill and a valuable attribute. I mean, how do you assess that? You mentioned that you're starting to put together some tools. How do you assess emotional intelligence?
Well, there is a tool that for the company that I use a lot of my tools through, like DISC and 360 feedback. We have a tool as well there that you go through and you answer a series of questions. It spits out a result on areas that you need to focus on in terms of emotional intelligence. And then we just work through those, in a coaching session one-on-one, like you would do with any other, management capability or leadership capability skill that they need to work on.
Gotcha. And are you finding that some organizations are putting a higher priority on emotional intelligence than skills and experience, or it's even Steven, or is it the other way?
Yeah, definitely. I think managing behaviours is so important these days, and skills is, hiring for skill these days is not something that a lot of companies do. Skills is something you can learn on the job or in a training course or whatnot, but being able to have a conversation, a genuine conversation with a person, is quite difficult if that's not something that you're used to be doing. So, or if it doesn't come naturally to you.
Yep.
So I think, I think companies are spending more time focusing on, hiring people that do have that skill and looking at people that don't and kind to upskill them in that area so that, you can have a better conversation with your employees just around, anything that employee is working on at the time or having trouble with. It's about that connection. I think it's that employee, that people-to-people connection that, a lot of managers don't have. It's not a natural thing for them. So, I think it's really important at the moment.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm finding that all the time, like more and more clients are asking me for the right people, the right emotional intelligence, the right personalities. If there's a little gap in the skill set or experience, you can upskill that or train that up pretty quickly. But personality and the awareness and the emotional intelligence is not as easy, but it still can be developed. And I think everybody should be self-aware enough to work on this and continue to work on this forever, because it's really what makes a difference in terms of your career and career opportunities. And it's a really good point that you gave as well. Like a lot of the time in employment, people are promoted to management level because they're good at what they do, but it doesn't actually mean necessarily that they're good managers. It's a very, very different skill set. And I hear this a lot in the feedback that I get from interviewing people as well, that, in terms of, what they like and don't like about their current organization and why they're looking to move on. So people have to remember that promoting someone that is a fantastic at what they do doesn't always mean they're going to be a fantastic manager. You have to really look at the other attributes and qualities of that person. Anything that you wanted to add with regards to that?
Yeah, I mean, That I totally agree with you. And, you know, it's one of the main reasons why I started Culture Fit HR, because I've been in HR for over 10 years and I have seen this so many times. And this is the one thing I'm passionate about is, you know, I was sitting on the other side of, you know, when so many employees would come in, you know, to my office or want to have a coffee chat with me, and you can see their face and they're just like, I hate working here. I hate this job. It's not the job. It's the manager. I don't say that to them, but I know it is. And, you know, I sell to Fit HR so I can help managers be better people managers, because it is hard. People are, you know, you don't know what's going to come up day to day. And a lot of managers, like you said, get promoted because technically they're good at what they do, but, you know, they're not people managers. And that's a whole different skill set. And a lot of companies miss the mark on that. And, you know, they don't put anything in place to support these managers stepping up into that new role. And all of a sudden they've got to manage 5-8 people. And, you know, they don't know how to even have a conversation with their employees. So that's why, you know, I want to put in these tools and resources and give that to them to help them, you know, be better in what they do and just feel much more, you know, fulfilled in their jobs as well, so that they're helping people.
Absolutely. I mean, it seems like a logical step. Look, someone's been great, doing great work for so many years. Let's promote them to become a manager. But it doesn't always mean that they're going to be a great manager. And it also doesn't even mean that they want to be a manager.
Yeah, yeah. So that's one thing. Check in first with the person, see if they want to be the manager before you give them a team of 8 people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's really, you know, it's so important as well to really understand your team, as you say, and get to know what drives them, what is going to make a difference to them, what's going to inspire them, what's going to make them happy, what's in line with their career attributions and their career you know, progression, what they have in mind for themselves. It's really important to have these open two-way conversations before people start promoting people just like that.
Yeah, and there's a really good book that I refer to by Daniel Pink called Drive. Oh, yeah. And this is one thing I talk about in my 12-month Lead with Conversation modules, is around, you know, identifying what motivates your team members. So, you know, we talked about intrinsic and extrinsic motivations. So in the workshop, we look at, you know, how are you motivated? Are you intrinsically motivated or extrinsically motivated? And then going through that process yourself as a manager, then I encourage them to go through that process with each one of their team members, because, you know, everyone is motivated differently. Some people are motivated, you know, with money or, you know, bonuses. So, and then other people are, you know, are motivated with, you know, being able to have extra responsibility or, you know, working on a new project. You know, the last company I worked in, they were all extroverts, you know, bar a couple of people. And when, you know, those introverts got recognized publicly, they died inside. Yeah. So that wasn't something, you know, even though the manager thought that was, you know, something they would really enjoy, like shouting out to the whole company that they've done well, acted the opposite. So it's really understanding, like you said, and figuring out, you know, what drives that they want to work towards and supporting them in that journey.
Absolutely. I really agree with that, and I hear examples of different examples like that all the time when I'm speaking to candidates constantly. Now, in terms of what you do, how different is it working with smaller organisations to larger organisations?
With smaller organisations, I get to tap into generally the leadership. So, you know, culture comes from the top. So if we can make those changes at the top, then it's going to be an easier impact for the rest of the organization to set, you know, those behaviors and those values. And, you know, I love working with smaller organizations because you can see the impact more quickly. I'm working with, you know, working with people that actually can influence and influence that change and make a difference. Larger organizations are great as well, because generally they'll have the HR processes and frameworks in place. That really helps when I'm working with teams within those organizations. It helps embed the stuff that we're doing in the workshops. They're both really good to work with, and I don't really have a preference over the two.
And would you work with any type of organization, from a gym to a corporate financial organization, or do you have a specialized niche?
Yeah, so I have experience working within the fitness and sporting industry for the last 7 years. And so that's the industry that I'm passionate about. I'd love to work with sporting teams and you know, fitness companies to help them improve their culture. So I do work with big corporates as well. So even though I do have a niche, you know, I also love helping. Really, my passion is culture. So, and culture goes across all industries. And if I can help businesses in Australia improve their culture, then, you know, I'd be happy.
I 100% agree. Like, for me, culture is everything. And I always say culture is felt more than it is seen. You know, when you go into an organization, even as a visitor, you feel the culture straight away. When you go in as a potential employee, during the interview process, you feel the culture. So culture is really something that is the backbone of everything. It's the identity of that organization and the religion, in a way, of that organization. And everybody has to be in line with that culture. Otherwise, you know, everything breaks down.
Yeah, and it's really, like, to the flip side of that, if there isn't a great culture, you can really feel it in the first instance when you walk through that door. And it's so important that companies, you know, have a really good onboarding and induction process. I saw a really good stat the other day. It was a Harvard Business Review reported 33% of new hires start looking for a job within the first 6 months of employment, and 23% of those new hires actually leave.
No way. That's a new stat for me. Wow.
Yeah. So coming from recruitment, you would know the cost that would involve with the company as well. So it's really important that companies spend the time, you know, recruiting correctly, and then also having the right onboarding and induction process in place.
Can you just repeat those stats for me, just so I remember them as well?
Yeah, it's 33% of new hires start looking for a job in the first 6 months, and 23% of those new hires actually do leave.
Okay, that's something new for me. So, I mean, that's just, that is so powerful. And as I always talk, when I talk to potential candidates, especially when I talk to clients, I always say, guys, the recruitment process is just the beginning. Once you've started working, the retaining process starts to kick in. You know, it's about how you keep that person, how you keep that person inspired, motivated. Do you follow up on what you promised during the interview process? I mean, that just ties into those stats incredibly well. You know, recruitment is only sourcing, and recruitment is only one part of the process. The rest of it is even more important, possibly.
Yeah, so that's culture is so much more important. One thing that I find that a lot of companies are doing these days, are focusing on purpose. And that's the thing I do with teams as well. And it's great when I get to work with the leadership team, because we work on the company purpose. But when I'm working with teams, we really look at, you know, finding out their why. And more people these days want to work for companies that, you know, are making a difference. Yes. And really, purposeful companies now. So, I think that's really important that companies start focusing on their purpose to create that culture where people want to work for.
Definitely. I mean, I'm even finding that the younger generation, the new generation, has a very different why themselves, and has a very different way of being inspired and things that they're looking for compared to the other generations. You know, in my experience, younger generation they want to feel part of something. They want to go along on the journey. They want recognition. They want gratitude. They want well done, you did a really good job. You know, that will go a long way, whereas some of the other perks might not be as important. What's your view on that?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think you'll see, you know, from, you know, my generations above me to now generations going into the workforce, like I said, they want to be working for companies that make a difference. It's not about job titles anymore or pay. It's about, you know, how are they contributing to a company that's actually doing, you know, something good and making a difference in the world.
Absolutely. Can't agree more. So, I mean, you know, this stuff is so important. And, you know, I love that phrase, building a high performing team. That kind of just says it all. Have you got any little tips or, you know, tips or tricks that people can start implementing immediately after this episode before they've even gone through the proper engagement process?
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing I talked about before, and it's really simple and something that managers can start doing straight away, is communicating clarity. So, you know, just spending, you know, take your staff member out for a coffee, you know, make sure they know what's expected of them, you know, ask them if, you know, what do they want to work on, what are their objectives and what support do they need, and maybe do that on a regular basis. Like I said, it doesn't have to be weekly, it can be fortnightly, but checking in with your employees, having that conversation, showing them that, you know, that you care, is really important. And it's, you know, it's so easy to do, it's so simple, and so many managers miss the mark on that.
Definitely. And can I just add that from a recruitment point of view, I think if managers would do that more often, they would have much less churn of staff. Because you know, that will restrict and inhibit people wanting to move on. You know, I hear that kind of stuff all day long. And if only people would start doing more of that, you know, constant check-ins, how are you doing, anything I can help you with, is everything in line with what your initial expectations were? I mean, that alone will glue and bind an employee to an organization and a culture more than anything else. It's so simple. It's the little things.
Yeah. It is the little things and the simple things that managers miss the mark on. It's crazy.
It's so basic. Awesome. So, Katie, before we wrap up, how can people find out about CultureFit HR and, you know, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so if you go on to www.culturefithr.com.au, you'll find there, I've also put a culture fitness test, so jump on and do that test, and I'll give you a free 90-day action plan as well to help you improve your culture. I'm also on LinkedIn under CultureFitHR or Katie Jones.
Awesome, that's fantastic. Well, I mean, Katie, thank you so much. That was really, really insightful. And as I mentioned, I love this topic and I could talk about this topic forever. And from a recruitment point of view, I mean, for all the listeners out there, your culture is your most valuable asset. Your people are your most valuable asset. If you do the little things, as Katie said, just to keep them engaged and inspired, it can already reduce your churn like you wouldn't believe. But if you want to really seriously build a culture and put the steps in place that build a strong foundation, then have a chat to Katie and she can consult with you guys about how to put some of these tools and strategies in place. So thank you, Katie. Anything else that you wanted to add before we wrap up?
No, I just want to say thank you for having me on. It's been a great chat and it's been fun. Thank you, Darren.
Absolutely. So thank you, everybody. And if anybody has more information or want to know some more information or you want to learn a bit more about these kind of things, please let me know. And otherwise, we will see you in our next podcast. See you soon.